Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 140. It's Tuesday night. It's Bloom Board time, everybody. So we'll get you talking some K to walk percentage, one of our favorite stats, risers and fallers from early in the season here. We'll talk some recent news and much, much more. You can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How we doing, my friend?
We're good. We're much improved from last week's double flu week episode plural thing. So so a little bit of a cough. You'll probably hear my voice, but feeling much better. Got a got a new little podcast Tumblr.
I saw that
from Baseballism. You like that? Not a sponsor of the show, but perhaps our people could get in touch with them. 40 ounces of water to put down for this show. So look forward to that.
Ooh, wow. It guarantees us we can't go past an hour and a half because he'll
can't go past an hour and a half. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's good stuff. Good stuff. But I'm glad you're doing better. We'll have some fun this week as usual. Talking some K to walk percentage. When I opened the outline and saw one of our favorite stats is the comment. Like last week was home run to barrels. Now it's K to walk. This is like the perfect Bubba and the Bloom storm the last couple of weeks. So yeah, we'll have some fun with that. Got some recent news. We're going to cover a good chunk of news, but there is a ton more. Like Ryan and I were talking off the air. Like we could do 2 hours on probably news over the last few days. It's been a wild one between call-ups and injuries and all this stuff. So we'll get the basics here. You know where to find. I got a bunch of other stuff if you need them and whatnot. And they're talking about baseballs in the chat. I'm actually wearing a baseballism shirt too. You got a sweatshirt on. It's like they should be sponsoring the show. It makes sense. So
local brand too, based out of Portland for me at least.
There you go. You got Nike up there. You got baseballism, man. Just living the dream. Just
Adidas.
Living the dream.
Adidas all is the out fun of Portland. Stuff. Not many people know that, but.
All the good stuff. We've got the chat starting up here, so good stuff as well. So yeah, let's have some fun tonight, boys. Let's talk some news and notes, and we'll start with the call-ups, at least a few of them. Connor Norby, Baltimore Orioles, got called up on Monday, went deep on Tuesday for his first career home run. He's taken the spot of Jorge Mateos on the concussion IL because he got hit in the back of the head by teammate Cedric Mullins while he was on the on-deck circle. Can't make that kind of stuff up, folks. It's something like the White Sox would do, not the Orioles, but it happened in Baltimore. So what's your thoughts on Connor Norby? Because my only skepticism is, like, once Mateos back from the IL, like, Norby probably goes back. But, hey, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, a pretty elaborate inside job, I would say, for Cedric Mullins to just physically knock out Jorge Mateo to force.
It's like a Nancy Kerrigan thing.
That is a Nancy Kerrigan thing. What was the other one's name? She's from Portland too.
Tanya Harding
is from the Portland area as well.
So, oh, look at you. It's a Bloomfield show, folks. I'm going to sit back and listen now.
It's just all around. That's my big question too, is we won't know what Connor Norby's playing time situation will be once Jorge Mateo comes back. So we think it's obviously pretty confident next week. Connor Norby's going to be a pretty decent pickup and stream for next week. But once Mateo's back, I don't know. So that is going to temper my fab betting. Norby as a prospect was HQ's. He was a top 100 prospect for HQ heading into the season, number 7 for Baltimore. Which on most teams, like, that's pretty medium, but being that the number 7 prospect for Baltimore is actually pretty damn good given what they have in the stable, with an 8D prospect rating. So we like Connor Norby. It's just you never know what the transition is going to look like to the majors. And again, given the given what we've seen both from the, or if I had to hedge or guess, given what we've seen from the Orioles with how they treated Heston Kjerstad, and given how we've seen prospect after prospect after prospect this year get called up and struggle, I'm just skeptical that Connor Norby will buck both of those trends. So my bidding will probably be pretty tempered entering this weekend for those two reasons.
Yep, I'm 100% with you on that one. Unless we get news by the end of the week, like Mateo's seriously hurt or something else going on, I won't be going too crazy on this one with Norby as well. So time will tell, but fun to see as the Orioles just keep bringing the goods. And it just shows you they have a lot of toys they could use at the deadline to fill that pitching staff, because they signed Julio Teheran on Tuesday, and that's not the answer, folks. So
was it the – I think there was a Heyman tweet. Yes. It was like, the Orioles fill a pitching need by signing Julio Teheran. It's like, I don't think they filled any need. I actually think they made it worse.
Yeah. Yeah, the contenders sign a starting pitcher to fill a void, and all the contenders are still looking to sign a starting pitcher to fill the void. Yeah, exactly. Not good. Not good at all. The Padres made a call up. They called up Adam Mazur from AAA to make the spot for, well, Musgrove and Darvish are on the IL, so you could pick your poison. It should have been Darvish's spot through the rotation, but looks like Mazur should get a shot here for a bit. He's made 10 starts in AAA, 3.86 ERA with 50 strikeouts and 51 and a third innings pitched. He was drafted in the 2022 draft, second round pick. So there is some quote unquote hype or pedigree behind Mazur. And in his debut on Tuesday, he threw six innings, one earned, one walk. No, that's the wrong team because it changed over while we were talking. Mazur threw six innings, one earned, four walks, and two Ks versus the Angels. So what are you thinking here? Because the outlook in AAA was good. Could have just been some adrenaline for the four walks this time around. But he should get a few shots to stick in this rotation, it looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. And given, I mean, on our Thursday show every week, we talk about how there's really no starting pitching available, especially in deeper leagues and 15-teamers. I'm certainly interested in Mazur, given the ascent, the 50-9 strikeout to walk rate for Mazur in the minors this year. I think he'll be in the rotation, like you said, Bubba, at least for a couple more turns. He would get the Diamondbacks at home next, and then probably at the Mets. So I like the short-term schedule for Mazur. And just like the, the overall profile of Mazur as a prospect, he's got a really good slider, a 92-94 fastball. The question's going to be, he has an improved changeup. You know, how effective will that be over time? But I don't know. I think given the lack of, you know, anything in the starting pitcher pool this year, I'm probably bidding on Mr. Mazur this Sunday.
Yep. I'll be in as well. Depending on if I would be shocked if he's not in the rotation for a little while here. So I'm definitely on board with you on this one. And the Padres, it's weird, cause every time I look at them, I feel like they're just not playing well, but they're contending. I look at their splits, you know, offensively, they don't strike out a ton. They're hitting lefties, they're hitting righties. Like, on paper, they look like a great team. They seem boring and vanilla for fantasy, but it gives their pitchers chances for wins, because even Dylan Cease hasn't been great, but he's you know, hanging into games and getting shots. So if Mazur can give you six innings every time out and limit the damage, like, that's going to be good for that category that Ryan loves so much that we will not mention by its first name on this show. And it starts with the W and has three letters in it. So have fun with that one. Pirates, they recalled Henry Davis. They called Jack Sawinski up on Tuesday. He went deep off of Glasnow.
Off of Glasnow. The only run in that game, by the way.
Yep. Had to mention that. Captain Jack did Captain Jack things. I didn't check the rest, but he struck out three more times. But that's Captain Jack. Henry Davis was called up. He went 1-for-3 with a double on Tuesday in his return. And people were clamoring for Davis because he went back to AAA, played 23 games, hit .296 with seven home runs mm-hmm. and a stolen base. And we know AAA is different, but the fact he was flashing those skills is great. It's very good feeling there. The catching situation with Joey Bart hurt in Pittsburgh, and I'm not even making a joke. He was actually playing well. He would be the catcher. Davis is going to get some run here between catching and maybe some outfield or DH spot. So what's your thoughts here on Davis? Because I'm still skeptical.
Skeptical, but again, happy that he could hit in AAA, and maybe we're running the risk of just, you know, it's obviously it's a different game going from AAA to the majors, and maybe he just doesn't adjust this year. But we see this all the time with prospects where the first time, second time, third time doesn't work, and then it finally clicks, especially with catchers. I mean, Henry Davis had a lot on his plate, no pun intended, like, to try to adjust to major league pitching and handle a major league staff. That's a ton in one load there. So I am willing to take the bait on Davis if he's available in two catcher leagues. I mean we talk about, like, I mean, do you still have Bo Naylor on some teams? Would you drop Bo Naylor for Henry Davis?
See, I don't know. Like, I was never a Henry Davis fan before the season, so I'm not believing right. Is the problem. Like, that's where I'm at. I'd probably stick with Bo Naylor. I get the excitement. Like, I'd rather have the question, like, would you rather, if we're talking about bench options, would you rather Corey Lee or Davis? I'd probably still have Corey Lee.
Probably stick with Lee. I've got some teams with like Travis Wells or Trevino, and I'd go Davis.
That there. I could see going Davis, taking a shot in the dark on that one. The only concern I'd have is like in a 12-team league, okay, in a 15 where we talk about there's no options. Now, if you go and pick Davis up and drop a Trevino and Davis struggles and Trevino gets picked up, I know Trevino's not great, but he'd still be very valuable if Davis goes downhill. That's the risk you're going to take. I get it. I'm just throwing out the devil's advocate in this situation.
Yeah. That's what will happen if I do it. But
I get it if people want to take the chance. I'm not going to tell people not to. I was never in on Henry Davis, and I'm not going to let 23 games of AAA change my opinion on that. But again, I could be wrong. That could be a fault of mine. Another call up, Justin Henry Molloy got called up because Spencer Torkelson went back to AAA. So real quick, before we talk Molloy, what are you doing with Torkelson if you have him rostered? Because I talked about it with Ben, 15 teams I'm holding, 12 teams I can understand the drop.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Even 15s, we just don't know how long it's going to be. And when Torque comes back, is it going to be the same Torque? So that's probably right, though. Probably a drop in 12s, holding 15s.
Now, you don't likely have this scenario in a 15, but let's just throw it like out there, like, because if we'll talk injury-wise, say you've been stashing like a Tristan Cassis or a Josh Jung, and then you just lost Torque. Which one of those would you drop, and which ones would you hold?
Torque, you're out of here. Picked up Tristan Cassis as a stash in some leagues. So yeah,
that's where I was going with that. Like, okay, so stashing some of these guys might be better off than keeping a AAA Torque. Is what that came down to.
Yep.
Justin Henry Molloy, on the other hand, he gets the call up playing. Now he's 0-7 in his first two games with the Tigers. That'll happen. But in AAA, 45 games, hit .253, 6 home runs, 3 stolen bases. Tigers fans were very hyped for this, very pumped up. What are you seeing with Molloy? Because I'm just not like, he just seems like another outfielder to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's always exciting when a prospect gets the call and there's some hype there and pedigree and all that sort of stuff. But for fantasy-wise, at least in 5x5, like, I'm not all that thrilled with Molloy. I mean, did have 23 homers and 611 plate appearances last year with Detroit. That's nice, but only 6 and 195 plate appearances this year. 3-for-6 on the base pass. Like, I don't think it's someone who's going to run, and I don't think he's going to hit for that great of an average. I do think Henry Molloy, he is at least lauded for his plate patience and plate approach. So in points leagues or OBP, I think he's interesting. I did, as I venture over to the On Roto website that hosts Toutwars, I want to see what, because he did go. This news was right before Fab ran on Sunday, and Molloy did go for $19 to Tim McLeod out of 1,000. Backup bids were 3 and 10. So, not again. That was right before the deadline. And Towers is OBP. I probably should have mentioned that at the top. But in an OBP league, I think Molloy is at least, you know, on your list, on your watch list of fab guys. In a batting average league, I just don't think you're just getting like a lot of mediocrity. And it's his first time facing major league pitching, yada yada.
Yep, totally fair. So yeah, I'm gonna kind of sit back on that one, because like the other shoe that could drop is, I'm not like overly excited, but if people like Henry Davis did at AAA, Parker Meadows is destroying AAA right now. And I'm actually surprised he has not gotten another shot yet. That was so, like, I'm waiting for that other shoe to drop. That could happen. Like, Akil Badu is getting a chance right now. There's a lot of like roaming pieces in that final outfield spot in Detroit right now. So this leaves me a little suspect, all things considered, but deeper leagues, I can see the appeal if you need it. All right, let's talk we'll head a little towards the injury side of things now, the fun side of stuff. Jordan Romano, elbow problems. Yet again, he got a shot in his elbow. Same shot procedure he got in spring training that sat him down for a month. So that's two shots in like a 5 or 6 week span in your elbow. That doesn't make me feel warm and fuzzy. Jimmy Garcia got the save on Sunday. There has not been an opportunity since then. Jimmy Garcia was a very popular target in Fab this past weekend. Chad Green's back. There are other options there if need be, but it looks like Jimmy's the dude. How are you approaching the situation if there's still a chance this weekend?
First off, kudos on the rundown for typing. Jordan Romano gets shot in elbow. Yep. So if I didn't actually know what was going on, I would have been like, what the hell, man?
Trust me, folks. Sometimes it's a test, because Ryan will look at the outline and he'll go, wow, what is that? And then I like explained to him.
I will admit you did the outline earlier this morning, and Adam Mazur was on there, and it's like, you're just messing with me.
Fake name Bubba over here. Fake name Bubba. Don't you worry.
But then did do some research, watch some of his starts. So he's a real person. I think Jimmy Garcia, I took in a bunch of leagues. In fact, probably one of my biggest, I got him for triple digits in most of my 15 teamers. I was pretty aggressive with Jimmy Garcia, because like you mentioned with Romano Bubba, this is a recurring thing with the elbow. And even though, you know, results are clean, all that crap, I think it's at least a month. And who knows when Romano comes back, if, you know, is he just going to magically be Romano again? I don't think so. We've already seen that not play out once already this season. Jimmy Garcia is also actually really good. Like I think could be a top 10 closer, assuming he has the job and has the job the rest of the season, which I know you're kind of going out on a limb with that assumption. But I think for now, Jimmy Garcia will get the vast majority of save chances. Schneider has even said that himself. And so just for that, you know, those three reasons, Jimmy Garcia is really good. He has the job. And I think Romano's going to be out for a little bit. And I guess the fourth reason is like Fab for closers this year has been just as death as last year. Like there has not been that great of an opportunity to pick up saves in Fab. So I was pretty aggressive with Jimmy Garcia on my teams. And like I said, getting him for, I think like in the low 100s on a good number of my squads on Sunday night.
Yep, totally makes sense there. And you might have some more relief pitching Fab this week. Breaking news to the show here.
Oh,
Bobo Beyond just tweeted it. Or
no.
Munoz just got hurt. I looked it up. He said has a home plate collision ankle. Munoz threw one warm-up pitch and left with trainers. So that's something to monitor. Might be just a small ankle injury. Might be a more serious ankle injury for Andrés Muñoz of the Seattle Mariners. But Ryan Stanek has had a few saves here and there. He's been the next man up in Seattle. That, again, not a guy that you're like running to go, oh my gosh, lockdown closer. But Mariners are a good team. They're given save chances. And you'd imagine Ryan Stanek gets the first chance there.
You're just going to drop that bomb on me mid-show.
I was reading the chat while you were talking about Jimmy. I was looking it up on Twitter, and yeah, it's going down.
Yeah, Stanek would come to mind, but there has not been a regular eighth inning guy for the Mariners. This wasn't like the Matt Brash Munoz bridge that we thought it'd be entering the season, but yeah, we will see. We will see. Home plate collision with an ankle. And Tommy Pham was not involved.
Yeah, Tommy Pham was not involved. That's good. Good segue. Do you want to jump to that? Now Tommy Pham goes to the IL with an ankle injury after his collision. So after all this, we love Pham. This is hilarious stuff with Pham, and then he goes and gets hurt. So guess he won't be effing anybody up anytime soon.
And definitely not. I mean, the true winner in this story, you know, we all saw the Pham clip and his offseason training, is Big Willie Contreras. That's the takeaway. Do not mess with this guy.
Yep, he's a hoss.
He's a hoss. And that's how Pham got hurt. I'm guessing like Pham just didn't feel it. The adrenaline's going, whatever. Do not mess with Big Willie Contreras. That's the takeaway. The Pham news totally sucks fantasy wise. We were all scrambling to update lineups. I was able to get him on the DL and Tout Wars, or the IL and Tout Wars, but replacement wise for Pham, I wouldn't even. The White Sox are just.
Yeah, you drop Tommy Pham, folks. Drop him. Like, we love him. 15 team, he's really good. 12, he's replaceable. Like, I've come to that conclusion. Every week when Ryan might feel the same way, I'm not going to speak for Ryan, but every week when we do our Thursday show, and then I write my Fab article over the weekend, majority of hitters are outfielders. Majority are outfielders. You might have some middle infielder. Yep. So, Tommy Pham in a 12-team league, you can use him as, like, your fifth outfielder as a streaming spot. Like, there's tons of dudes. You can – Jesus Sanchez, I know it's only 5 games this week, but – he could be a guy that fills in, because I know Ryan likes him, and I picked him up in a few, but that's just one. There's a ton of options in the outfield week in and week out. Larnach's still out there. Kirilloff was out there in a lot of leagues this week. There's dudes, Alec Burleson, like Uncle Ted's talking about, who's on fire, who we've been talking about for a while, and that's been huge. Uncle Ted means Elliot Ramos. That's another one. Like, there are a ton of outfielders out there compared to any other position. So Tommy Pham can be a stream. That's pretty simple. Like as much as we like him and we joke about him, he hasn't been like lights out great either. So there are Andujar, your boy Andujar, as Michael Cicchini in the chat says, I'll give you some love for that, Bloomfield. So yeah, you're smirking. So what are you smirking about?
No, I just came to that same realization this past week in Fab, where I was doing like hitter waterfall bids, and like 8 out of the 9 are outfielders.
Yep.
So it's interesting that I think you were talking with Ben about that on your Monday show, but I came to that same real. And when I came to it, I was like, oh, maybe it's just my teams, whatever. I don't know. But it was interesting to hear both of you guys talk about that too.
Yeah. And especially considering in the preseason, if we think back to when we're talking like, you know, prepping and doing drafts, and it's like after this X amount of outfielders, it just drops off so fast, which it still did, like talent wise. But as a whole, the pool was still like much larger than we gave it credit for, slash a lot of injuries and stuff like that opened up new opportunities. But it has really turned that way this past week, or last few weeks, when it stands out in a big way. So something to think about with Tommy Pham. I think he's a drop in most formats. 15s you can maybe hold, but
I'm holding in 15s if I can. Yeah, but yeah,
I think he's a drop elsewhere. All right, back to the pitching injuries. Robert Gasser, this is a bummer. He's on the IL with elbow soreness, tightness. That they wouldn't give it a designation completely. He did miss the start of the season with elbow, like spurs in his elbow, bone spurs in his elbow. Now he goes back to the IL. Some news today from Pat Murphy. He says there's a possibility. Okay, this is the quotes that make us go nuts. There's a possibility he could miss some time, but from the first MRI, I guess it looks pretty normal. That's what we're going off of. So I'm going with the alternative. He's missing at least a month,
which would make Gasser a drop.
Yes.
I'm going to have to, because I have Gasser in a few leagues and a few 15 teamers this coming Sunday. I'm going to have to kind of look and see what I'm doing there, but leaning towards a drop. The Milwaukee rotation, my God, is awful. It's Freddie Peralta at the top, but then it's Bryce Wilson and Colin Ray.
Jacob Junis is rehabbing. He should be back in another week, which I
says it's not much. But, Jacob Junis.
Hey, but that'll be a valuable. I'd rather have him than Tehran.
I mean, they need someone to throw.
But like, you got to give the Brewers credit at least. Like the first two games this week in Philadelphia, they had Koenig open both games. He threw the first inning in both games, retired the side in both games. Then it was bullpen games Monday and Tuesday. Like, that's nuts. But
yeah, they just called it, I guess. Jansen junk. Good hell.
Yeah, I know it's bad. They need to make some trades quickly. Yeah. Aaron Ashby's back, actually. He's starting on Wednesday.
That's right. That's a good call.
He's starting on Wednesday. So that could be something as well. Keep an eye on that. He's probably on a lot of waiver wires. So that could be another one we might talk about on Thursday evening if things go well on Wednesday. You mentioned this on the Thursday show last week, and this is an interesting one because now there's actually people, beat writers, talking about this. Nuelve Marte, he's about, as of today, 60 games into his 80-game suspension, and he's allowed to start, like, I don't think rehabbing is the right word, but getting ready for the season with the AAA team on June 11th. That's a week from tonight. So next Tuesday, Nuelve Marte will be rehabbing, and then he'll be about 2 weeks away from rejoining the Reds. So stash season is shrinking quickly, Ryan.
Absolutely. I think last weekend was the time to do it. And I think in some NFBC leagues where he late drafts, where he wasn't even Marte drafted. Wasn't even drafted, that could be a fab bonanza. Yep. One of the few we've had this season. Nuelve Marte, yeah. I mean, we will see what he looks like, but it's nice to be able to, even though you're suspended, play against upper level minor league pitching. So that'll be good in terms of the ramp up. And then got to think he's got an everyday role with the Reds, given all the injuries that they have. So yes, we'll be cool to see Nuelve back.
Yes, it will be. My Gladiators will appreciate it. Some other draft and holds will appreciate it. So
yeah,
there'll be some life there from Nuelve. Some Francisco Alvarez news. There was early speculations he would rejoin the Mets in their London series this weekend. The Mets, of course, they don't like fun things, so they put a kibosh on that, and he's going to rejoin the Mets starting next Tuesday back on the mainland. So for everyone, he's pretty much picked up everywhere now, it feels like, but just for you that did roster him, you got to wait till Tuesday. Probably not a whole lot of analysis there, but just giving you a heads up. Royce Lewis returned on Tuesday. He went deep, still looks great, but the main story here, Ryan, is Edward Julian goes back to AAA. He struggled quite a bit, and I was actually tweeting it, I think, before the move or when the move happened, but I was thinking about it, rostering, like setting my lineups, is what are they doing with Jose Miranda? I was thinking on Sunday because I was doing Fab, thinking, okay, Lewis is coming back. What are we doing? Like, Miranda's been really good. Like, he's not a star, but he's been very serviceable, and they can't just get rid of him. And on Tuesday, when Lewis came back, Miranda played first base. Carlos Santana sat, which makes a ton of sense to me, honestly. But what's your thoughts, I guess, on this? You could hit Miranda, Lewis, Julian, anything with the Twins here.
Lewis has now gone two full games without making an out, which is just Royce Lewis. Wouldn't be shocked if he just rakes and rakes and then gets hurt, comes back, rakes again. That's what we've seen from Mr. Lewis. But for those of you who drafted him early, congratulations. I'm sure that felt good getting that homer back in your lineup Tuesday night. The Julian news was pretty surprising to me. And I actually have Julian on a good number of teams in my active lineup. He was a Gene Segura Award winner these last few weeks doing absolutely nothing. And when I saw the news, I was like, oh, that's an obvious drop. Thank you, Twins. And I no longer have Edward Julian. It sounds like our other Willie Castro is going to survive and play and play a good amount at second base. So I agree with pretty much everything the Twins did, and it makes sense to, at least for now, keep Jose Miranda in the lineup. And it's great to see Willie Castro. I think you were talking with Ben on Monday how good he's been in May.
Amazing.
Speed game is just as good as we saw last year. So nice to see Willie Castro, the Swiss Army knife of drafting whole teams and fab teams, really. Keep that everyday gig, we hope.
Him and Urangifo are almost that Spider-Man gif. Almost.
I know.
They're really close. Really they are. Close. Max Muncy, this one kind of surprised me because I just forgot Max Muncy was even on the IL, so I wanted to bring it up here because I might not be alone on this one. But he experienced a setback when he was swinging the other day, and he's been shut down indefinitely from his rehab assignment. This seems like one that might linger again for another month or so. My question to you, would you drop Max Muncy in 15s?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. That means that covers the rest of the bases, folks. So, that's why I want to bring this up.
That was the right answer.
I think he's sitting on a lot of rosters right now.
Yeah. It shouldn't sound so.
I would.
No point blank. He's 98% roster, but that's before the setback. I think you got to drop him.
I think you have to, not just because of the setback, but we talked about him before. He's hitting .223 again. He's got 9 homers in 46 games. That's nice and all.
Starting to lose playing time against lefties. You were talking about that a bunch and curling in the offseason.
Yep, it's happened. Oh, and Dom said the setback was known before Fab, so people are still holding on. I think Muncy will be one of those dudes, though, as more guys get hurt, there's more tough decisions, he starts becoming that casualty in certain formats. And
yeah, I mean,
were you looking at 15s?
Yes, main event, 98%.
Okay, I'll look at OCs here in a minute. I'm curious now. Everything's
contextual. I mean, if you've got a team with no injuries or one injury, sure, maybe you keep them. But
Muncy's still 97% rostered in OCs, 11% started. Thank you, folks. Appreciate you all on that one. But OCs are just an animal of their own. But I'd be dropping Max Muncy, but that's just a me thing potentially. We'll kind of see how that continues to play out. Last bit of news here. Blake Snell back to the IL. Adductor re-aggravated the adductor. I don't want it's a groin injury, folks. He re-aggravated his groin injury. Felt the same tweak, all that kind of stuff. He thinks it's not as bad as previously, but we know how that goes with players saying that. They did a bullpen game earlier this week. Keaton Wynn threw in Arizona in a rookie league game or complex game on Tuesday. He's expected to rejoin the team this week and to be a bulk arm in Snell's absence. It's a bummer, Bloom.
It is, and we were kind of talking earlier, but like I think Blake Snell was absolutely hurt by the late signing and not doing anything in spring training, but not getting good enough reps this spring, and that obviously hurt. Blake Snell is I want to call him a second half pitcher, but he has pitched a lot better in the second half throughout his career than he has in the first half. Blake Snell is almost every year I do a first for a second half strikeout minus walk, and Blake Snell is on there in terms of the highest risers. So this injury is kind of a killer, because if you're believing that Blake Snell is going to round into form and become that second half Snell that we've talked about so often the last few years, you need to get those first half reps out of the way. And Blake Snell is not doing that. Plus, this is a re-aggravation of a previous injury. It's have him in TGFBI and I'm holding him, but it's not, you know, it's looking like a disaster right now.
Yep. Most of my Snell shares are on draft and hold format, so it is what it is. I think I have one share, one of the Bubba and the Bloom auctions. So he's on the bench right now because there's really no replacements in those 15 team leagues. But yeah, it doesn't feel great. It doesn't feel. I actually had him sitting for his two step. Like I just don't trust him until I see otherwise. So we'll continue to take that route with Snell for now. All right, it's Bloom board season, folks. What do we got tonight, Mr. Ryan Bloomfield? Is this a fun one, as I kind of hinted at earlier on the show?
All right, we got K-minus walk, our favorite kind of, if we get asked this quite a bit, if there's one stat or skill you use to evaluate pitchers, what is it? And it's strikeout minus walk rate, which is what it is. Your strikeout rate minus your walk rate. The league average on it, just for context and to kind of level set everything, league average strikeout minus walk rate so far in 2024 is 14%. We typically like, we use that 20% threshold. For really good pitchers, for starting pitchers, I loosen that a little bit to anybody in the upper teens. Is, you know, that's not bad given what we're dealing with in the pitching environment on waivers this year. And then anything like 10% or lower in strikeout minus walk rate is really bad. So what we're looking at here is the 12 highest risers from, I included March and April, as well as May and June. There's a couple starts in June. So basically you're on the left side here for the YouTube crowd, for the video crowd. The left side in green is your highest risers in strikeout minus walk from April to May. And then on the right side, which we'll talk about in the second half here, is your biggest fallers from April to May. I also threw their ERA on there on the screen as well, just so. Just interesting to see how ERA can vary with so many of these guys. Some of these guys have big rises in strikeout minus walk rate and their ERA got worse and vice versa. Sometimes it aligns perfectly, but just figured I'd throw a surface stat up there to give us that that added context. So that's what we got tonight.
Yep. No, it's a fun one. And we're going to start with the top here because it's a player that I've actually written about in a couple of Fab articles, because Cal Quantrill has actually looked really good in May, like really good. And even at home, he's looked really good. He actually went into LA over the weekend, gave up four runs though, in four and a third. So maybe that's was the thing that needed to stop him. But Philadelphia, San Diego, he had a couple of tough matchups over the all, but still 3 out of 5 games in May, not bad. But Quantrill, 2% to 16% increase. So 14% overall increase in K to walk. ERA dropped from 5.34 to 2.50. I know you're going to tell me it's a Rockies pitcher. I don't want him. It's Cal Quantrill's garbage. But is there something we should see in Cal Quantrill that's interesting here? Because it is a market improvement, and a lot of these improvements will probably have some kind of pitch mix change or something involved here. But what are you seeing with this Cal Quantrill one? Because in 15 team leagues, he seems worthwhile as a streamer. In 12s, I still don't really want to go there.
Yeah, like it's still Cal Quantrill, man. And so this is what I'm not going to overreact to. Like, the reason why Cal Quantrill is on this list, the big reason why he's on this list, is because he started so damn bad. He started from 2%. So you could still be pretty bad and improve from 2% and show up on this list. So, yes, Cal Quantrill had a month where he was slightly better than league average in strikeout minus walk rate. Congrats to Cal. But we know who Cal Quantrill is.
Okay, like, fair enough.
I'm not overreacting to 4 or 5 starts.
All right, sounds good. Seth Lugo, though, this is one I'm excited about, because I was a big fan of him entering the season, and it was kind of a slow start showcased by this chart. You know, 9% K to walk in April, 1.66 ERA was good though, but the K's came about in May. A 21% K to walk in May was still a 1.79 ERA, which is quite outstanding. And he 6 innings or more in 5 out of 6 starts in May. Didn't allow more than 2 earned runs in any start in May. Had a couple double-digit strikeout games in May. I love what we're seeing with Lugo. Is this something we should be excited about going forward?
A little bit. It's crazy how he has a 1.72 ERA. I still think in general this is the same guy that he's been the last 3 years. Seth Lugo has been, his ERA the last 3 years is 3.50, 3.60, 3.57. There is nothing wrong with that. So I think, Seth Lugo's pitching well over his head right now, but the skills really aren't that bad. A little bit of a pitch mix change, threw a few more curveballs in May than he did in April, and that has been a big, she had a big jump in ground ball rate. That curveball that Lugo throws gets a 60% ground ball rate and a 16% swinging strike. So a few more whiffs in May, a few more ground balls in May because of that curveball. If he could lean into that even a little bit more, he only throws it. Lugo only throws the curveball 15% of the time. So I think there is some room for a few more curves. But I think in general, this is someone who looks pretty good to me. And I don't know, mid-threes ERA guy going forward, just don't expect 172 to last for very long.
Yep, no, that sounds about right. Kevin Hastings in the chat here. I can't wait for the "he is who we thought he was" post from Ryan when Quantrill definitely gets blown up. So
yeah, man,
it's okay. I'll have that right next to the Ryan Feltner one too, so don't worry about it. So we'll talk about him in a little bit.
Feltner's on this.
He's on the other side.
Oh, yeah, of course he's on the other side.
Joe Arrico says the whole reason Ryan made this board was to talk about Feltner. So yeah, we'll get to that one in due time. We're not going to talk about Chris Sale because Chris Sale, like, that's pretty awesome. But what I do want to talk about is Dylan Cease, because this one stood out to me when I was writing daily matchups that drops Wednesday morning. And his K to walk went from 19% to 28% over the month process, which makes sense. His May numbers strikeout-wise were great, really good stuff. But what I think is interesting is ERA 2.78 to 4.08. I know it's not the point of this chart, but that stands out in a big way. That's like a two-run, like that's a massive like run-and-a-half jump. Over this stretch, he's allowed 15 runs in his last four starts. He has six base starts. What are you seeing with Dylan Cease? Because the K's are up, the K's look great, but he's also, is he like living in the zone more? Is he throwing more fastballs and getting hit? Like, what are you seeing with Dylan Cease? Because the results aren't matching what looks like dominance at the same time.
A lot of the K's are there. It's the improvement in walk rate for Dylan Cease. So the walk rate went from 10% in April down to 5% in May, which. And Dylan Cease has pretty much been a career 10% walk rate. League average is 8% on walk rate. So 10% is slightly worse, if not bordering on bad. But Dylan Cease, so anytime I see a change in walk rate, even midseason, first stat I go to, as always, is ball percentage. And Dylan Cease is throwing more strikes. Ball rate dropped from 39 to 36% from April to May. So he's throwing more strikes. Still getting a ton of whiffs. Actually, whiff rate went up 3% for Cease from April to May as well. So, like, all that happening at the same time is really good. And it's interesting that Dylan Cease has pretty much become a two-pitch pitcher. Fastball slider, he's throwing a combined 85% of the time.
Wow.
But the control gains are because of slider. He's throwing more strikes with it. So he's actually leaning on the slider as a strike pitch as opposed to just a pure out pitch, because it is now one of his basically two main pitches. So I actually like what I'm seeing from Dylan Cease. I'm somewhat buying the improved control, and the whiffs are absolutely there. I mean, Dylan Cease could lead the league in strikeouts. We knew that going into the season, but if you compare it with the league average walk rate on a Padres team that isn't that bad, has pretty good pen, I like it, man. And I'm not Dylan Cease guy.
No, it's always been walks with him. So if he can improve that, if it's a two-pitch thing, that's fine. He has given up four homers over his last four starts, so that's pretty interesting to think about on that one. So maybe the two-pitch mix is leaving more fastballs that get hit once in a while, and he just lives with that to not walk as many guys. We'll see. But I guess it'd be something to watch for maybe at the end of June to see how things are going for Dylan Cease. Matt Waldron, teammate of Dylan Cease, is another fun one, the knuckleballer. 12% K to walk in March and April to 21% in May and June. But he saw the ERA drop from 4.35 to 3.62. Outside of a horrific first start in May, he's been outstanding ever since then. Strikeouts have been coming up. Only 4 Ks in the start on Monday, but prior to that, was putting up the strikeouts too. But with me, it's like the knuckleball. If it's inconsistent, it could be trouble. But right now, it's pretty darn consistent. So what's your thoughts on Waldron? Because we don't talk a lot of knuckleball pitchers on this show.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I don't know. I'll be totally honest. I don't know what to think of Matt Waldron because I don't really know how to evaluate knuckleballers. Like, who's the last knuckleballer, effective knuckleballer we've had? R.A.?
R.A., probably him in Wakefield. R.I.P.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. It's just very hard to evaluate Matt Waldron when we just don't have, like, really that many comps. And I know Waldron's not, like, a pure knuckleballer. He only throws a knuckleball. Like, he doesn't even throw it half the time. There's a four seamer that does get whiffs, but that's just because everyone's expecting the knuckleballer and the four seamers 15 miles an hour faster. He throws like a sweeper and sinker that just don't miss bats at all. So like, I don't know. I think you ride this kind of mini hot streak while the knuckler's knuckling, for lack of a better term. And, but I don't know. I'm not super enthused long-term, but we've seen this happen. If the knuckleball is effective for an entire year, you can get an R.A. Dickey type of run, but, I don't know how to evaluate these guys because they only come around every 5-10 years.
It's tough. Speaking of knuckleballers, have you seen David Fletcher doing things at AAA for the Braves as he's a pitcher now with the knuckleball? Insane. Yeah.
I think he's trying to change his identity from other off the field.
He's gambling on himself. It's okay.
And reinvent himself as a knuckleballer in the minors. But yes, I'd have seen that. That's pretty interesting.
And then I don't know if we needed to talk about a third San Diego Padre, but we continue the list here with Michael King. There's something going on down there at Petco Park, as Michael Cicchini even said in the chat. Maybe they're one of the better pitching organizations. We'll see. Michael King increased his K to walk by 7% from 12 to 19. Obviously, the ERA followed as he's been dominant outside of one start in May. I think it's one of those we saw him do this kind of stuff last year, and maybe he's comfortable. I don't know, but what have you seen with Michael King?
It's weird. I'm looking up the Padres schedule now, at least like the game log for some of these guys, because that's the first thing that comes to mind. If it's all Padres, like what was the schedule like? Waldron at least faced his last start in April was at Coors. Wait, no, I'm reading it wrong. First start in May was at Arizona. Are we looking at the same thing?
All right.
And then it was versus LA, then at the Braves, then at Great American Small Park. So certainly no walk in the park. And as I pull up King's game log, it's been versus LA, at Cincinnati, at Kansas City. There's a couple cakewalks in terms of versus Colorado, versus Miami, but schedule's been like, I'd say neutral for San Diego in May. So I don't know if it's that. It's probably just sheer coincidence. Michael King, the big thing that I saw was whenever I see an increase in strikeouts, a drop in walk, I'm going to look for ball rate and for swinging strike. Michael King improved in both. He got more whiffs, up to 14% swing strike in May, and threw 33% balls, so threw a ton of strikes. So whatever Michael King was kind of doing wrong in April, he seemed to have fixed it. The velocity is something that I'm looking at with Michael King because he has been a reliever for much of his career. Velocity so far has been very stable, 93.2 in April, 3.3, and then his most recent start in June, 93.6. So everything looks to me pretty good for Michael King right now.
Beautiful. Let's talk Jake Irvin. This might surprise some people. 14% K to walk in April, 21% in May, 4.28 ERA to 2.55. Had a great two-step last week at Cleveland, at Atlanta, striking out 16 over 12 innings of two runs. He's been two runs or less in 5 of 6 starts since May 1st, and the strikeouts about a K per inning, quite effective. The walks, only 5 walks in the month of May, which is a beautiful thing. And like we're talking about the Padres doing good things. You know, Trevor Williams, Jake Irvin, these guys aren't like world beaters, but they've been very formidable, like streaming options coming out of Washington. Don't go streaming Patrick Corbin, but there are some options there in Washington. Not Williams anymore, unfortunately. But
he got out while the getting was good.
Yep, that's one of those where everyone dodged that bullet. So what's your thoughts on Jake Irvin, though, who seems to be pretty, I almost want to say, legit.
Yeah, man, impressive stuff from Irvin, I think. It kind of all starts with the walk rate, with the elite control that Jake Irvin has shown, and that is backed by ball rate. Picked up a couple ticks on his whiff rate from April to May, and I think that's huge. The big thing for Jake Irvin has been pretty much a new cutter that he's throwing. He's only throwing it like 15% of the time, but he throws it for strikes, and it's actually the pitch that misses the most bats for him. Jake Irvin doesn't really have an out pitch. His curveball is probably the only one. It's 12% swing strike, which is pretty bad. So Jake Irvin throwing this new cutter 14% of the time is a welcome addition, a nice change to the arsenal, ditching his sinker to get rid of it. And the sinker is pretty bad. So you tack the pitch mix change on with the in-season improvement for Jake Irvin, And I think you've got someone who is sticking in 15 team rotations and maybe even 12s. I don't know if you have him on 12 teamers, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, I could see him in 12s if the divot's right, because pitching's so bad out there. So there are weeks where Jake Irvin can be serviceable. Before we flip to the opposite side, Ryan, there's Chris Sale, Barrios, Bassett, Rodon, Webb, Cortez. If there's anybody that you really wanted to talk about there, the floor is yours.
Not really. Just interesting to see Chris Bassett on there. Kind of the overreaction of someone who is just so stable and old and consistent. Chris Bassett kind of going back to who Chris Bassett is, especially, I mean, the 5.64 ERA in April was brutal. Kind of quietly posted, I think, a 283 mark in May with, again, nothing like crazy. Same strikeout minus walk rate as Cal Quantrill, 16% in May. But nice to see Chris Bassett turn around.
Yep, most definitely. Let's flip to the fallers side of things here. And one of my guys leaves the top with Fott, and you got Wheeler. These are like their drops, but kind of minimal drops. We might come back to them later. But I want to go to Tanner Houck, because this is one where people have been very high on Houck this season for very good reasons, of course. But he sees a drop from 23% in March, April to 15% in May and June. ERA still fine, 209 in May compared to 1.6. But the strikeouts did come down. Not a lot, though. It was more the walks, it appears, for Tanner Houck. So when you're looking at a Tanner Houck drop-off like this, is there anything that stands out to you?
For Houck, not really. Not really. The underlying control looks fine. Still a ton of ground balls in May. And like you said, the strikeouts were pretty much there. I do worry just long-term about his velocity change much. I do worry just long-term rest of the season about Tanner Houck with the workload. No, velocity was stable April to May, down 0.2 miles per hour, which to me is nothing. But so no, not too worried about Tanner Houck in May or even in June, maybe July. But I worry about Tanner Houck in August and September, given that he hasn't thrown more than 110 innings in the majors in his career. So he's already at 78.
Yep. I'm with you. That was one of the big concerns with a handful of pitchers that we've seen on a few boards of late, that like the whole Garrett Crochet traded to the Padres talk. I'm thinking, why do the Padres doing? Because he's almost going to be at his limit by the time the trade deadline.
Yeah, hits. That was, and I think we had some chatter in the chat about that. That's an interesting trade rumor. I don't know. White Sox, that makes sense, depending what the return is. But if you're the Padres playing for a wild card this year, like, I don't know if that makes sense.
Don't get it at all. I was going to bring up George Kirby, but then he struck out 9 on Tuesday night with one walk. So I think we're okay on that one. That was just kind of, he had 27 Ks and 2 walks. So I think he's fine in May, and you know, we're good. I want to go to Hunter Green, though. Hunter Green, 21% K to walk in March, April, 11% in May, June. ERA is about the same. The thing with Hunter Green, we talk about it every time, Ryan, it's pretty simple. Walks. He had 18 walks to 34 strikeouts in May. Pitched really well, but the walks are a tremendous problem. Are you seeing anything else with Hunter Green that stands out to you?
I'm actually not that concerned. April Hunter Green had a 7% walk rate. I don't think anyone believed that. Like, that's not Hunter Green. He is a worse than average control guy. We'll throw that one out there. So the April 7% walk rate, I don't think was going to stick. I think this was just more Hunter Green coming back to who he is. The thing is with Hunter Green, the interesting part was the drop in Ks from 29 to 24% K rate from April to May. Actually had a huge uptick in whiffs. So that's something that just doesn't make sense. He has a ton more swinging strikes, but didn't have the strikeouts to show for it. So not too concerned in Hunter Green. Like, I think at the end of the day, this is the guy who we thought he was entering the season. You're going to get a ton of Ks. You're going to get those frustrating starts, though, where he walks 4 and pitches those 92 pitches to go 4 1/3 and then leaves the game. I think that's just kind of who Hunter Green is at this stage in his career.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. Kyle Harrison, this is one of those.
Here's your boy.
19% K to walk in March, April, down to 8%. ERA is about the same. When Kyle Harrison came up last year, it was all about he walks too many guys. Well, we saw that in May and June. We saw the walks increase to 17 walks to 29 Ks over 32 innings in six starts. He did have zero walks and five Ks on Tuesday night, so that was a promising development. And I was telling Ryan before the show, he was getting squeezed pretty good at times in that one, so that could have maybe been better. But walks, to me, were a major issue. There's probably deeper stuff that you might have on this one, but that's pretty much Kyle Harrison's deal. Is he's going to go about five or six innings. You're just praying he doesn't, you know, walk the farm type situation.
Yeah, it's like he slipped up because the walk rate was an issue for Kyle Harrison coming up until it wasn't at the end of his minor league career. And then the walks looked great in April, but they absolutely came back in May, and 38, the ball rate went from 33 to 38%. So like Kyle Harrison was not finding the zone in May. Will that continue? I'd like to think May was an anomaly, but given the track record that Harrison had, at least coming up as a prospect with those walk issues, it's a little disconcerting. And I'm not even a Giants fan.
No, it's concerning. He's a potential drop coming up. I'm not going to try to pretend that. Keaton Wynn had his moments. He was a drop. There's these young pitchers. It's just the way it's going to go this season. They're going to run out of innings, run out of consistency. So we'll see. Like, I like Harrison. I'd keep running him if you can, but I can understand if people want to move on as well, because there's going to be it's going to be a roller coaster ride. And I don't think the ceiling's high enough right now to really pay off in fantasy.
Yeah, I'm very surprised at a 21% strikeout rate all season for Kyle Harrison. I thought that would be higher, but
it feels like he's almost going like the Jordan Hicks route of like losing velocity to like last longer in games. It's weird because the guy we saw early on doesn't feel like the same pitcher, but like I was telling you earlier, like Logan Webb was on the Chris Rose rotation this week and he was glowing about pitching and working with Kyle Harrison on a day-to-day basis. Like, he loves what he's seen. He says he is worth the top prospect hype in the system. He's just, you know, he's young, he's developing. So again, that doesn't mean it's gonna happen this year, but it feels like he will get there eventually. I just don't know when. That's the question. And I don't think it's this year. So keep that in mind.
Michael Cicchini in the chat. No walks tonight from Harrison, but worries the fastball isn't as good for how often.
I agree. It's very hittable. Very, very hittable fastball. There's no denying that one. Let's talk about another guy that's very hittable, and that's Eric Fetty Whip, I'm going to call him. Since May 1st, it's been rough. We see him on this chart, 21% K to walk in March, April, to 10% in May and June. He had 13 walks in May and June to 27 strikeouts and 34 and two-thirds innings. Still, he allowed zero runs in three starts and four or more in three starts. So it is literally flip a coin with Fetty. But some people are, especially in 15s. So what are you seeing when you look at him here?
Yeah, I was looking up when Fetty had those like two legendary starts where he morphed into like peak Johan Santana, 20 strikeouts with no walks. That was the end of April. So that's also probably why. Yeah, that's also probably why Eric Fetty is on this list, is because those two starts, I don't even know what he was doing, just pitching out of his mind.
Either did he blacked out like Will Ferrell in Old School.
Yeah, exactly. Love a good Old School reference. So, yep. I don't know. I very much lukewarm on Eric Fetty. I said that even after those two outings. Since then, he's had games of five walks, three walks, and four walks. So, like, the control is just so inconsistent. He doesn't throw strikes, and he doesn't really miss bats. Like an 8% swing strike rate, you're not going to get many strikeouts by missing so few bats if you're Eric Fetty.
Yeah. Let's talk some Mariners here. We skipped Kirby, but let's talk the bottom of this list. We're going to start with Luis Castillo. Dropped from 24% to 12% over the last month. He did drop a run in ERA as well, which is kind of surprising seeing this drop. Kind of got the opposite effect here. But looking at his game log starting since May, this reminds me of like Cincinnati Reds days, because he's getting strikeouts here, and like for the most part, he's getting six or more Ks in like four to six starts. He's going six innings, two earned runs or less, but man, 14 walks over 36 and two-thirds. Are we seeing something different here than Castillo? Because that literally feels like all those Red starts where he was trying to keep the ball in the ballpark in Great American, so he'd walk too many guys.
Was it just a couple bad walk starts or consistent?
It went 3-0-4-3-1-3, so three or more in four out of six.
Yeah, that's not great. That is not great, and very much reminiscent of the late Cincy days. To me, what I see with Castillo is kind of the exact same pitcher that we saw last year. Same exact swinging strikes, same exact ball percentage. Had a 3% walk rate in April, man. Like no one outside of George Kirby can sustain that. And it went up to 8% in May. And then obviously his June start was pretty bad too. But I'm not overly concerned by Luis Castillo. I think this will get sorted out. I almost hope it was like two bad starts with like five walks as opposed to multiple with three, but whatever. I think he'll be fine.
I think it'll be fine too. And like, you're not benching Luis Castillo.
No,
that's not where this is going. But like the old thing with the argument against drafting Castillo early is he's a whip killer and he's starting to be that dude again. So that's now he's getting to the territory. Would you rather roster Hunter Green for the strikeout upside than Luis Castillo? I think it's still Luis Castillo, but they're starting to be, at least to me, a similar conversation at some point in time. So we'll see. Ryan's not the Green, and I understand the disagreement, but I think they're getting closer to that than they should be. Logan Gilbert. Now this one, again, I told you before the show, I wrote him up for Wednesday's daily matchups, and I saw some things like, whoa, 23% K to walk March, April, 11% May, June. The ERA over almost it went from 2.03 to 4.66. Yep. Like it over doubled. It was not good. And when I go game log hunting, then I'm like, okay, the runs, yeah, that's explainable, but 11 walks, the strikeouts are down to only 27 over 36 and two thirds. He had four or less, or heck, five or less, and four out of six starts. It was weird though, Ryan. Like I told you, still had a 13.2% K to or a swinging strike rate. So he was making guys miss, but he wasn't finishing guys off. Like it was a really weird dynamic with Logan Gilbert. So what do you see when you look at him? Because it's been a rocky ride. Like I stack against him in DFS from time to time now.
That's what it's been. Is just the complete drop in strikeouts. I mean, that is it. The walk rate has been stable throughout. And so again, when I see that drop in strikeout rate, I'm going to go right to the whiff rate. And like you said, Bubba, the whiffs are actually up and the whiff rate is really good. So I am not concerned really at all about Logan Gilbert. The velocity is also fine. It was 95.8 in April up to 96.1 in May. So it's not like this is someone who isn't missing bats, doesn't have the same zip on his heater. All that stuff is still there. I think you just trust that. You know, maybe it's something with sequencing and that he just doesn't have that put away pitch or didn't have that put away pitch and May just couldn't get that third strike. But I don't know. Everything I see with Logan Gilbert looks steady. So I'm buying this dip that we saw from Logan Gilbert in May. 4.66 ERA was bad. Not many Ks is also bad, but I think it turns around pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's just a bizarre setup and he gets the A's on Wednesday. So that could be a get right spot. But like I said, the A strike out a lot, but they also are hitting well. They have a good WRC. Like they're pesky. So like Kirby got the job done, but it's one of those where nothing surprises me with the A's anymore. It's either all like they could get shut down, they could score seven runs, and I'm not surprised anymore. So very pesky offense in Oakland, and we'll see how Gilbert can do. Because the way Gilbert's been pitching, pesky offenses have been crushing him lately. So this will be a very interesting start on Wednesday. All right, there's your boy Feltner. There's also your other boy, Bailey Falter, if you want to go that combination. There is Stroman, yeah. There's Wheeler, there's Fott. Anybody else you'd like to talk about on this list? Because I kind of passed over Fott, Wheeler, Stroman, because they're kind of like minimal changes and they're still pretty good. But if you want to hit on any of these guys, go for it.
Yeah, man, look at Feltner. Look at that. That ERA. Beauty from 16. Look at that ERA in May, 7.42. I think I actually streamed him.
Oh, I bet you did.
No, I streamed him on like his one good May start. I forget what it was.
That was May 23rd at Trust Oakland.
Me. Yes.
That was six shutout innings with six Ks.
And how many wins?
He has zero wins on the month.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
He has allowed five or more runs in four or six starts this month.
Even to your San Francisco
the Giants.
Yeah, dude, good God. Earned runs 8.505. He had 13 earned runs in his. He had a two-step last week at Coors.
Yep.
Yeah. God.
The four total strikeouts.
it'll be July. We'll be talking about streamers and Fab, and I will be bringing back up Ryan Feltner. I'll tell you right now. Two other names on this list that I just thought were interesting were Marcus Stroman and Bailey Falter, just because the ERAs were so damn good and the skills were so damn bad. This is almost impossible to do. Marcus Stroman had a 6% strikeout minus walk rate in May. Like, that is terrible. That's almost as many walks as strikeouts, yet he had a 191 ERA. I don't know how you do that. Ditto for Bailey Falter. Actually had a 5% strikeout minus walks, so slightly worse, with a 223 ERA. Like, that is, you look up fool's gold in the dictionary, and those two guys in May come up. So just an observation of how alarming the divide between stats and skills for Marcus Stroman and Bailey Falter were last month. And if you're going to tell me to flip a coin or pick one or the other, it's always going to be the skills and never the ERA.
Yep, that's skills, not roles, as they say. So, yep, definitely with you on that one. So, interesting list as usual. There's some fun names that on both sides of the spectrum here, but you got like the Padres / kind of Toronto on one side. Toronto, you got a couple of Yankees too.
Yep.
Yeah, and then on the other side, you get you got the Mariners. So it's a really weird.
Which really again, weird those dynamic. Mariners, like that Kirby, Castillo, Gilbert, they're. Quote unquote falling from 25, 24, and 23%, yes. Which is all really, really good in April. And again, like, I mean, we've said it a bunch of times, but the ebbs and flows of a season, you're gonna have good months. Sometimes it's as simple as a bad month. When the whiffs are there, when the strikes are there, when the velocity's there, I don't get too concerned.
Yeah, there's like an old adage back in the day. A good pitcher is good 2 out of 3 starts. Like, that's just the reality of the situation. So, like, these great pitchers might be, like, 3 out of 4. And honestly, that checks out with some of these guys, like your Kirby's and your Castillo's. They've had a rough 1 or 2 starts in May out of, like, 5 or 6 starts. So, you know, that might even out to their good at April's. Now they're back to, you know, reality. So,
And it's not 3 out of 4 every time. Sometimes it's 3 bad ones and then 12 good ones. And so it's exactly. Just kind of – it all depends on when they hit.
Cannot be Luis Eel, who's setting Yankees records – which is insane. Like, just saying that out loud, and you think about the storied franchise of the New York Yankees, and Luis Eel is setting records for starting pitching stuff. That's bonkers stuff to think about. Let's talk about a starter here. Oh, yeah, we have a question in the chat here from Uncle Ted. He mentions, what do y'all think about Cody Poteet? His stats are solid, and he'll get a good run. That is a possibility, Mr. Cody Poteet, who did make a start against the Giants over the weekend, which, again, grain of salt, Giants on this one. But he went 5 innings, 2 earned, 6 Ks. He made a spot start in April against the Guardians, 6 innings, 1 earned, 4 Ks. What are your thoughts on Mr. Cody Poteet?
It's interesting. We were prepping for our XFL, which is a keeper league that we draft at First Pitch Arizona. We do a monthly supplemental draft. I co-own a team with Derek Van Riper, and he brought up Poteet and comped him to, I thought this was pretty interesting, comped him to like a potential, like a Zach Littell.
That's fair.
Where
I was going to say Pepio.
Maybe it was Pepio.
That's the name off the top of my head, is Pepio. Right. I could see both.
I should when quoting others. No, he did say another Littell. Okay,
yeah, I could see that.
But I agree. I mean, Pepe is same type of guy. I could see that kind of like one really good pitch, has some command, older guy without much major league experience who could work it through for a few starts. And I think Poteet's going to have some, at least a little bit of run in the medium term. So in a 15 teamer, I'm interested. I just don't think the ceiling is all that high, but. If he can get you a run of 3 to 4 solid starts together, I think that works.
Yep, I could definitely see this. Kevin Hastings in the chat here just came up with, are you adjusting your expectations for these guys or others based on hotter and more humid weather going forward? Great question.
Yeah, and there's so, I mean, we didn't even talk about the ball tonight. Like the ball is such an unknown variable that where it's pretty obvious, I think. We are not playing with the same ball that we have the last few seasons. If you look at the homer to fly ball rate league wide, it's just I think these kind of more pitch to contact guys can thrive a little bit more. But again, that can absolutely change over the summer. So, I mean, to directly answer Kevin's question, I'm not really adjusting like specific expectations for any one pitcher. It's just something I keep in a track. Maybe for flyball pitchers, it's something I look at a little bit more. Flyball pitchers are the ones who get helped the most by the balls that we've had so far in 2024, and probably are the most volatile if the ball and or weather were to change this summer.
Yeah, and we you know, you're talking about the ball. I know I tweeted about it recently watching a Braves game, and I'm like, what are we doing here?
Yep.
Joe Arrico tweeted something tonight I was looking at. He said, Teoscar Hernandez hit a ball 107.2 miles per hour off the bat at a 29-degree launch angle, and it died at the warning track.
Was that tonight?
That was tonight.
Yeah, yes. And so it was off Aroldis Chapman. Aroldis Chapman immediately threw his glove right onto the mound, just knowing it was gone, and it was not. And Aroldis Chapman would know. He's been around.
Yes, he's been around and given up a lot of long balls. So think about that one. A couple questions from Twitter for the us. M on Twitter, mask on, mask off 99. All my NFBC teams suck. When should I start studying for next year so I could have a redemption tour?
Oh, anything Jesus.
Anything we've learned to avoid next year other than rookies?
Yeah. damn, that's a tough. It's a tough one for a mask on, mask off.
Yeah.
Honestly, what I would say, and this we have whole off season for this, don't overreact to 1 year.
Yeah.
Just because something didn't work this year, don't just because rookies have struggled this year, don't fade all rookies next year. No, things do not work that way. If you overreact too much to there's lessons learned and then there's overreactions. You don't want to overreact.
And I don't want to make like big claims now because we're just talking about, you know, full season numbers. We have four more months to go.
Yes.
The guys that might suck now, if you held on to them in a roto format, might put three to four months of good production out there. And next thing you know, you're buying back in next year. So I'm not like, there will be some guys we obviously screwed up on in big ways. There's no denying that. But I wouldn't go too crazy with that just yet. Let's put it that way. The only way your season's done right now is if you have been hit with all of the injuries. But that's tough to do in a fab format. So we'll say that much. Our buddy Corbin Young, which K to walk percentage risers should we bet on? No pun intended. So which ones do you believe in? I like Jake Irvin. That's fair.
I like Jake Irvin. And I'm going to say Dylan Cease.
I knew you were going there. That's fair. Not disagreeing with it. Like Sale's obvious. I'm not going to say Sale, but one for me, we didn't even talk about him, but it's Logan Webb. And that's just because I watch him pitch a lot. And that's one guy everyone tell year after year, people go, he doesn't strike out a lot of guys. And then he goes through waves like this. He can strike out guys when he needs to. So I'd be there, but I think Irvin's my number one on this list. I like Irvin quite a bit.
The other one, I don't know how we haven't talked about it. I don't know how well he will hold up over the entire season, is Carlos Rodon, who was one of the biggest risers in strikeout minus walk. But the big thing with Rodon, it was absolutely backed by a pitch mix change. Rodon throwing his changeup a lot more, throwing his slider a lot less, and a few more cutters as well in place of that softer slider. So a tangible change in Carlos Rodon's approach led to very good results for your boy.
My boy. Rob DiPietro says Padres, Jays, and Yanks on the risers. Yep, there's a trend on that side of the board. Corbin Young had another question. Quantrill and Lugo on the risers, LOL. It hurts to see three Mariners on the followers, but I still believe. Eric Fede worries me the most on the followers list besides the obvious ones. Which pitchers do you believe in most on the – well, we already talked riser side. What about the follower side? Which ones would you buy back in on?
I'll placate the Corbin. Go with the Mariners.
Yeah, that seemed like the easy answer. So,
what do you think about Fott? I mean, we didn't talk about Fott.
I'm fine with Fott. What it comes down to, perennially, every game with Fott is the same conversation we had in February and March. Walks, home runs. He's done a great job with home runs lately, like really good. And when he's not walking guys, amazing starts. He still has the hiccups from time to time. That's the Brandon Fott problem. If he can continue to get better at the walks, the sky's the limit for him. He's looked really good in a few starts lately. So,
he really only dropped from 22% to 16%. So it's
still serviceable.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
BP at futures_bet, good listener to the show here, says, whoa. As a Logan Gilbert owner, should I be worried? That is scary. I think we're not worried yet, but it is.
It is scary, but I'm not worried.
And then Ben Tidd says, apparently Seth Lugo is Greg Maddux now. Yeah. Didn't you know that?
He's right.
I saved a screenshot for my show tonight that I was going to record, but I'll share it with you guys. Sarah Langs, Slang on Sports, amazing follow. You should all obviously be following her. She said, Luis Eel, 7 consecutive outings of 6 innings or more and 1 or 0 runs allowed is the longest streak in Yankees history.
How many consecutive? 7?
7. Wow. 7 consecutive. In a world where we can't get a lot from starting pitchers from time to time, that's pretty bonkers. Kevin Hastings in the chat here says, Jason Collette has talked about there being humidors at all ballparks. Do we know if they are tweaked midseason, or is that the culprit during? And I've heard Jason talk about this a lot. It's really a conversation because there's no real, that we're aware of, regulation of how they're set at each ballpark. So certain parks, certain days, certain starters might like things differently. It's almost like the deflation of footballs in the NFL. Like it could literally vary from day to day, from game to game, from starting pitcher to relievers, what they like type thing. There's all kinds of aspects to it.
MLB is very protective of their baseballs and how they treat them. And I know there have been studies of people trying to get baseballs this year and cut them open, and it's actually quite hard to do and get. Yeah. So it's, I don't know. It's, and this has been the case the last few years as well. But yeah, wouldn't be surprised one bit if we see some study come out over the All-Star break or whatever. Saying these and things are different.
It doesn't even seem like it's a universal ball. They all see like game to game. They're just different. It's bizarre world. Update on Andrés Muñoz dropped about 30 minutes ago. He's been dealing with lower back issues, which flared up during the collision. He's going to have an MRI on Wednesday. Oh, son of a bitch. So I'd almost take the ankle injury over the back personally, but this isn't good, folks. This is the best way I'm going to put it. So get your Ryan Stanek bids in this weekend, everybody. Get ready. Gonna be a fun
tepid. Yes. I don't know if he'd be the guy, but
most definitely. But I guess we'll have to kind of wait and see on that one. But that'll wrap us up, Mr. Bloomfield. Any final thoughts as we wrap up a Tuesday show and get ready for Fab on Thursday evening?
No, just some uplifting news to end the show. Appreciate that.
That's what I'm here for.
Probably about 30 ounces into my 40, so made it through.
Beautiful. Made it for now. But yeah, and even Stephen Crawford, disappointed to see Flaherty exit early.
Yeah.
Back tightness. He's optimistic for his next start. Again, never trust the player on these things. But even one of the beat reporters said Flaherty was uncomfortable and had a difficult time talking to us at his locker after the game. So the way they do treatment, though, I honestly wouldn't be shocked if he's back. And they have extra days off, so he might be back in like 7 days instead of 5 type thing. So. That works
out. Huge bummer, though. I think he only threw 60 pitches tonight.
60 good pitches. Looked good again. So we'll have to wait and see on that one. Honestly, if he has to just miss one start to be fine the rest of the way, cool. That's cool. We can live with that. See where things go from there. But again, final thoughts, Mr. Bloomfield. Sorry, you're drinking ounces 31 and 32.
It'll be 33 in a minute. So that's about all I got.
Well, that'll wrap us up, folks. Chat, you guys are awesome again. Thanks for joining us, and everyone, thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back with you guys Thursday evening for your Week 12 Fab preview, almost halfway point now. That's getting ridiculous to think about. But until next time, you can check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intric. This was Bubba the Bloom, episode 140. Catch you all next time.